Welcome to Carsey and the Kid. With your hosts, Steve Carsey and Alexander Danilov.
And good evening all, and welcome to a Friday edition of the Steve Carsey and the Kid Show. Of course, with scheduling and everything going on right now, it's a little bit crazy. So we're able to do tonight, which is great. So we're going to do an opening day slash opening weekend special. We're going to have three games Sunday night, Steve. So baseball is officially back as of Sunday. Very exciting. And your regular season starts soon, too.
Yeah, absolutely. The big league season getting started very shortly. A lot of these teams have already broken spring training and they're playing in either their own ballpark or a visitor's ballpark to get used to the night games, to get used to the fans in the stadiums, and to ultimately get used to being in an environment that they're going to be playing in. So it's going to be fun, and the AAA season, the minor league season starts on April 7th, so we are not too far behind that as well.
Yep, and today is April 1st, which means April Fool's Day, and a lot of people don't know the history of it, so I'm going to give a little bit of nerdy history behind this. It actually goes back to 1563, going by the Gregorian calendar. I'm reading off of history.com now for people that are interested, because I know everybody always says, oh, April Fool's, but nobody really knows, or few people actually know what it's about. So I'm going to read right from history.com here. April Fool's Day dates back to 1582, when France switched from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar, as called for by the Council of Trent in 1563. People who are slow to get the news or failed to recognize the start of the new year had moved to January 1 and continued to celebrate it during the last week of March through April 1, became the butt of jokes and hoaxes. These included having paper fish placed on their backs and being referred to as, I don't really know how to pronounce this, but it's translated into April fish, which symbolized a young, easily caught fish and a gullible person. So it's something that's been around for hundreds of years. Same thing Valentine's Day. I learned this year, Steve. It's been around for a very long time, become popularized over the years. And today is also special because in 1789, the U.S. House of Representatives met for the first time in New York. So it's a special day on the historic front as well for American history.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, I did not know that as well leading up to this, and you kind of shown some perspective on what April Fool's Day is truly about.
Yep. Well, a lot of people obviously having fun today. There's stuff all over the web with different stories. There's the so-called bromance between Gronkowski and Tom Brady. They were doing some practical jokes and pranks too. So, of course, a lot of people are reviving the Mark Cuban from years ago, where he got into a fight with the referee, and it was all obviously staged. They showed that today while I was at the gym. I'm like, there's no way this happened, and I forgot about that whole incident. So, I guess everybody's a fish or a gullible person on April Fool's at some point or another.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I was. Excuse me. I was caught up in one today, and I got joked on as well. So everybody's in the spirit of playing jokes on everybody, and sometimes you just don't realize what day it is. In spring training, every day like it's the same, but April Fool's is a fun day, just like any others, and it's a very, like I said, interesting perspective that you gave our fans on what and how it came about.
A little bit of history never hurt anybody, of course. So let's take it to the present now. We have some stuff. So just staying on April Fool's, though, we have Starlin Castro and Didi Gregorius of the Yankees, new teammates as of the 2016 season. And after the trade that sent Adam Warren over to the Cubs and Starlin Castro over to the Yankees, which I still believe is a fantastic deal, especially for how cheap the contract is. But they actually reenacted a stepbrother scene, which you can get on thescore.com. So it's thescore.com/MLB/news. And there's a link video right there, which is I'm sure you'll enjoy. You can do that after the show. Apparently, the Padres have discussed trading for Pablo Sandoval. I'm not really sure why that would ever be an option for them. There's some news there as well. You could check that out. Taylor Teagarden suspended 80 games for PED use. We have Hideki Matsui. He's going to be throwing out the opening day pitch, first pitch for the Yankees. It's a special moment. Of course, so many great moments for him, including a World Series MVP. Nicknamed Godzilla because of the immense power that he had, was really good with the Yankees for a long time. Really, you know, a batter a lot of people feared because he can do a lot of things with that bat. So the Yankees giving the honor to Hideki Matsui. What do you think about that, Steve?
Yeah, it's a great honor for him. Was a teammate of mine in the early 2000s, and you know, just a reputable guy, a guy who comes to play the game every day, plays the game the right way, and for him to be able to still be part of that organization and be able to throw out the first pitch opening day, I think that would be very special for him and the fans in New York.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and there's some news that the Montreal mayor is announcing a plan to get a baseball team back in Montreal. Of course, we know that team eventually became the Washington Nationals, so the baseball fields of Montreal from a professional standpoint have been barren for a number of years, but there's a little bit of an action plan there to try to get a squad back to the area. So that's going to be interesting. So over to I don't know if that's really going to happen. I mean, obviously, it got moved for a reason. There was a lot of talk of contraction many years back with the Minnesota Twins as well. Obviously, that didn't happen, thankfully so, because we've had a lot of great memories with Twins games and things like that since. And that actually kind of spurred them to do certain things and became a playoff team after those talks heated up. So what do you think about a team going back to Montreal and the potential expansion for Major League Baseball once again?
Yeah, you know, if I think they do it the right way, I see it as very possible. I mean, I think the dome that they played in was really getting run down, and the turf wasn't very good. Maybe they build them a new stadium, you know, for the city of Montreal. But you know, there were some years there where they had very good players, and Pedro Martinez and you know, a few others that just kind of made that city come to life. And it's just one of those things where if they're able to get another team, and baseball has been continuously making money year after year and year. Right now it's about $9.5 billion surplus is what they make per year. So for them to be able to add a team or two, I think would be very smart, but it has to be done in the right way.
Mm-hmm. It could only be good for Major League Baseball to be able to expand. I know they're trying to obviously continuously grow the message of baseball. We saw opening day last year in Japan, and they're doing some different things here. So baseball is definitely different now. It's a new order under Commissioner Rob Manfred, so we might see an expansion there. Certain things don't change, of course, with Pete Rose's situation getting into the Hall of Fame. Of course, Pete Rose isn't helping his own cause, but that's a whole different conversation. But Rob Manfred, actually agreeing with Bryce Harper, 23-year-old super slugger or a super slugger in the making, say you know, the comments that he made a couple weeks back, which we've touched on, about baseball and being a tired game and a tired sport. Now, of course, Steve, you and I love baseball. We revere the history of it, the richness of it, going all the way back to when the first game was played in Hoboken, New Jersey, with Abner Doubleday drawing up the plans and stuff like that. So the game is very rich in history, for sure. It's not lacking in that. But eventually things change, whether it's forced or otherwise. So I want to get your thoughts on this as somebody who's played the game. You've seen it from an aspect of growing up and, you know, so close to Shea Stadium and living so many great memories watching it and, you know, being with your friends and stuff like that, and then obviously playing in the game, and now from a business standpoint, I'd like to get your unique take on that, on how baseball can improve, or even if it should improve and become, so to speak, you know, kind of lift that label of being a tired sport.
Well, there's always ways you can improve the game of baseball, and it just doesn't go for baseball, it goes for any other sport. You know, you got to continue to grow with the fans. You got to continue to grow with the game. You have to make subtle changes. Obviously, there's some rule changes this year with sliding into second base. You know, not being able to go outside of the baseline to try to take a second baseman or shortstop out, you know, due to what happened in the playoffs last year with Chase Utley. So it continuously needs to grow. You need to get feedback from the players. You know, the players are the ones who drive this game. People come out to watch those players, and you know, they want them to put on a show. But there has to be respect between players, between pitchers and hitters, and it just can't get out of sorts and just get very disrespectful. So, you know, to continue to grow with the game and the fans is something that I'm all for.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, the grow is a great thing, but then we see with football and obviously the showmanship and the celebratory nature of that. Score a touchdown, you do a leap, or you dab it as Cam Newton does, and I still don't really get it, quite frankly, but I do it from time to time just to be a little obnoxious and to make people laugh, obviously, including myself. But that's very celebratory basketball. We saw Russell Westbrook get annoyed at the Pistons player the other day for the way that he acted after that game or during that game. So you see it throughout other sports. You see it in hockey, but, you know, hockey, you can knock somebody down. Baseball, you brush him back or you hit the guy, and that's really the way it's always been. So do you foresee that kind of going away, or after, if someone throws or brushes back a batter after a home run was hit and he's caught watching, do you think that ends up becoming something that they kind of ban after a while? They throw up a warning sign right away, or they just throw the guy out without warning if he gets hit next time he comes up to bat, if he, you know, staring at a home run or dabbing it after he hits a home run or something like that?
I don't think you'll ever get rid of it. I think, you know, I'm from the old school of, the game gets policed by the players themselves. Guys know when they're disrespectful. Guys know when they, you know, do something that they shouldn't do to show up another player. Nobody likes to get shown up on the other team and be disrespected. So, you know, players police that stuff. They have an understanding. You know, sometimes maybe if somebody hits a home run, they don't get hit that particular game, but it's remembered and put in the memory bank, and maybe at some point down the road that, you know, they get some retribution. But I just see the players continuing to police the game themselves, whether it's baseball or any other sport. They understand the right way to play the game and, you know, the disrespectful way to play the game. And, you know, sometimes emotions can run high. I mean, you hit a big home run in a big situation and, you know, you do something with a fist pump or, you know, a bat flip and you know, I think players understand in the heat of the moment, sometimes things happen, but as long as you're not getting consistently disrespected, it's okay. Things can be shown and it can be fun without being reckless.
Mm-hmm. And I mentioned Abner Doubleday, Abner Doubleday being credited as being the inventor of baseball. The first official game actually played 1846 in Hoboken, New Jersey at Eliason Fields with the New York Baseball. The New York Baseball Club defeating the Knickerbockers 23-1, and that's from HobokenBaseball.com if anybody's interested in finding out more about the game. But again, very rich history. A lot will change, I believe, in the next few years with different things. I think they're going to modernize it differently. You're seeing managers with iPads in dugouts and testing that out and seeing what it is. It's only so much you can have in a gigantic binder and thumb through that. It's easier just search and find a name of a pitcher, find out his stats and things like that. So obviously baseball will change and will modernize over time. It's a question of how much. And it's really controversial for the game of baseball because it's such an old game and such a great game that, you know, anytime you want to change anything, it's almost like you're changing America and you're messing with America. And I don't think anybody really wants to do that or at least say that publicly. So that's the appeal of baseball. And, the great part about baseball is whatever you change, you got to do it the right way. Make sure you try to cover all bases. There will always be people that are not happy with a certain change or any change, no matter how minute or small. But certain things have to change and will change as long as we don't become that kind of sport where you have a lot of off-the-field issues because the characters are just too much and too loose and all that kind of stuff. And I know for you, Steve, that if you were managing, you wouldn't let your guys on social media or as actively on social media because they can get in trouble with that. But that's part of why some of the other sports have actually connected so well with fans. You know, so would you ever think about changing your opinion or your stance on social media, for example, if you were, let's say, the commissioner?
Well, I would just like to limit what guys can do on social media. I don't think you can ever take it away from a player. Mm-hmm. That's a personal choice. you know, he's on his phone, he's away from the field, he can express his opinion. But when it kind of gets in the way of what the team is trying to accomplish and, you know, is letting information out that maybe shouldn't be out because he's in the clubhouse or has info about the team that he may leak for some odd reason, then I think it crosses the line. So you'll never take social media away from the players. I think that's a great way to connect with the fans on a personal level, but within reason and not going overboard or over the line.
Mm-hmm. Some good news from the world of New York Yankees. CeCe Sabathia, of course, on his road back from rehab and all that kind of stuff, all the problems that he's had, all the demons he's trying to exercise right now, beating out Yvonne Miller for the final spot in the Yankees rotation. Hopefully CeCe Sabathia returns to some semblance of who he was before, even if he's in the RA, in the fours or something like that, as long as he can produce for them. So the Yankees rotation right now, Steve, with the 35-year-old Sabathia winning that number five spot, you have Tanaka at the top, you have Michael Pineda, you have Nathan Eovaldi, who is arguably their he was the winningest pitcher last year, but he's been working on some things there. I think he's going to be much improved this year. He's going to be more settled in with the Yankees. You have Luis Severino, who was great last year in 11 starts, 5-3 record, 2.89 ERA, and a 1.20 WHIP, which he can work on. But you know, if you keep striking guys out at the clip that he was striking them out at, you can get away with things like that. Although it is dangerous to play that game. Then you have CeCe Sabathia at number five, with 29 starts last year, led the team in starts, but 6-10, near five ERA, just not been himself, obviously. But and he hasn't really been himself. Well, considering if you look at his old self this spring either, with his ERA is in the mid-fives at this point, but it's still enough to best Yvonne Nova at this point. He's owed $25 million this season, it's just we hope to see some semblance of what CeCe Sabathia was in the past, but it will make a story that's going to be followed. He will feel pressure. He'll put a lot of pressure on himself for sure because of everything that's happened. And I know you touched on this, Steve. I believe it was one of your last licks a week or two ago, but you gave an impassioned mention on CeCe Sabathia and what he's gone through.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a tough thing that he's gone through for him and his family, but for him to be able to continue the path, continue the growth and staying sober and then come to the Yankees and compete and battle for that fifth spot, is very rewarding for him. I don't think we ever would have talked about CeCe Sabathia trying to hold down the fifth spot in anybody's rotation, never mind Yankees, excuse me, and getting paid $25 million. But, he's in there, he's going to compete, and he's going to go out every fifth day and give what he's got. But that Yankee rotation, what you just spoke of, looks a little suspect to me because you got health. You know, you have young guys, you have guys who are not proven, and you got guys who have some had some health issues, and that can kind of fall apart in a hurry. So, I think on paper it doesn't look great, but it will depend on the health of that starting staff.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And with that, we're going to move on to the opening day weekend opening, which is Sunday, Sunday, April 3rd. We're going to have a few games for Sunday. I don't remember the last time this opening day was on the weekend, Steve. Do you?
Yeah, I don't. Usually one of the games, they start on a Monday or a Tuesday and have the next day off. But yeah, I think they're just starting it a day shorter, and it's a good thing for baseball because you have a lot of people home being able to watch opening day.
Yeah, which is kind of begs the question of why they didn't do that in the past, especially this weekend. Supposed to be really bad weather, so a lot of people, especially in the Northeast, are racing for a pretty big storm and just nasty weather all around. So they'll be home and hopefully safe and warm. But more likely, I'll be watching baseball. There are three games Sunday, and then there are four games on Monday. And then the schedule, of course, opening day always gets a little whacked out. But it's going to be a great day of baseball for sure, not just the fact that it's opening day, but because you have the Cardinals and the Pirates. Cardinals playing at Pittsburgh. That's the 1 o'clock game. and you have the Blue Jays and the Rays, a nice divisional rivalry there, a divisional matchup, and that's the 4 o'clock game, that's on ESPN2, and then the World Series rematch with the Mets and the Royals. So baseball starting out with an interleague game, which maybe in a year or two we won't be saying interleague, it'll just be one league, but that's going to be the night game, and that's an 8:35 game. So, Steve, what do you think of them doing not only just doing interleague play throughout the season, which that's been going on for a little bit now. They've been experimenting with that, but starting the game, starting the season with a rematch of the World Series.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, I know we got into interleague play quite a few years ago, and then it was just division against division. Now they've kind of expanded that a little bit, and I think they're always going to have to call it interleague play because you have the DH in the American League and, you know, the pitcher hitting in the National League, so you can't really call it one league or you're going to have one rule, so... It's just intriguing that it starts so early in the season. Obviously, opening day with the rematch of Kansas City and the Mets, and you know, it's again something just discussed not a short time ago about continually to grow with the game of baseball, and this is part of what they're doing. And they're growing the game, and there's a lot of young people out there that see baseball as you know, not American League, National League, but just see it as you know, one league, and that's something that we're going to have to continuously, you know, see and adapt to.
And one of the things that's that might change it to what I was alluding to is if they bring over the and I know this sounds far fetched, but the DH over to the National League, and I know it sounds far fetched. Again, I'm not saying that they will or anything, but remember several years ago, about a decade ago, or even less than that, replay was unthinkable, and now you have replay in baseball and you have challenges and things like that. So it is a different game. We don't know if that's going to happen 100% because the baseball purists will lose their minds, but that doesn't mean it doesn't happen. But again, something to just think about, and it's good obviously show fodder. Monday we have a quadruple header. We have the Astros at the Yankees, which would be a great matchup. That's a 1 o'clock game. You have the Mariners at the Rangers at the 4 o'clock game. You have the Dodgers Padres as a 7 o'clock game, and you have the Cubs Angels again, another interleague play at 10 o'clock. So you have a great slew of games here for sure. Probably the weakest of that is the Dodgers versus the Padres, just because of how weak the Padres are as a whole. But game one of the season, everybody has a clean slate. Everyone's 0-0, and everyone has a hope and a glimmer that they're going to end up doing something this year. But obviously, we're not as sanguine on the Padres' prospects this year. But, you know, it is opening day, so teams play a little bit differently on that, especially when you're opening the season at home. Speaking of, the Dodgers are projected, this is from Fangraphs, 2016 projected wins are, hold on, let me actually just change this back up. They're projected to have 92 wins again, but the Cubs are projected by Fangraphs to have 95 wins this season, which would be the most. And I have a lot of issues with what I'm seeing here. They have the Blue Jays, who I know you love for this year, Steve. They have them at 84 wins. They also have them at 4.7 runs per game, which I don't disagree with. It's very difficult to even project that. They were 5.5 last year. But you have the Red Sox and Astros at number 2 and 3, tied for second place at 4.65. You don't see the Diamondbacks here for a long, long way until, you know, way back. They're below the Pirates. They're below the Rays. They're 2 below the Rays on this list at 4.16 runs scored per game. They were 4.44 last year. I could only see them getting better with another healthy year of Paul Goldschmidt, David Peralta doing what he did last year, A.J. Pollock another year under his belt, shedding Aaron Hill. Of course, they don't have Inciarte there, but they do have a lot of talent on that team. Jake Lamb is back, and he's healthy, and he's going to be competing with Yosmani Tomas for some playing time. So you're going to have a lot of stuff going on at this Diamondbacks team, but I that's something I disagree with. But let's stick to the wins here. Do you believe, Steve, that the Cubs are a 95-win team this year?
I think they're going to win a lot of games, but I don't think they're going to quite get to 95. I think, you know, I'm talking a couple shy. I'm talking 91, 92 wins. We talked a little bit earlier about wild cards and winners in the division, and I kind of gave you one, and I changed one of my perspective wild cards to the Cubs. So I do see them winning 90-plus games, but I don't see them getting the 95. It's a very tough thing to do, especially the division that they're in when they play the Cardinals and the Pirates so many times.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and you sent that to me earlier. We promised that we would do this, and it's not something that other shows don't do. We're not going to pretend like this is something unique to the show, obviously, but we do a little bit closer to the start of the season because so many things change. I wouldn't have thought that CC Sabathia, for example, would be in the starting rotation for the Yankees this year, especially with the dreadful spring that he's had. But stuff like that could impact what the Yankees are able to do this year, and I don't know how long or how short their leash is going to be, but if you're putting somebody that struggled so mightily in your rotation as a number five starter, then there's obviously other problems with that team. You saw what happened to Andrew Miller, and there's a whole bunch of different things going on. So what happened to Will Smith also, that changes dynamic a little bit. Not that the Brewers were a contender, but the idea that people get hurt even with freak stuff. So we do a little closer to the season. It's also how I do my fantasy drafts. I do it a little closer because people get hurt, people get traded or signed late or whatever it might be. Some people get cut out of nowhere, and it doesn't happen as often, surprise cuts with guys you would draft, but it does happen because of XYZ reasons. But Steve, you have as your division winners, you have the Mets, the Cardinals, and the Giants, and your wild card team. Well, one of your wild card teams is the Dodgers. This is what you sent me earlier. Of course, you amended your other wild card team, which is the Pirates in the National League. To I guess the Cubs would be your team.
That's correct. I took out the Pirates. I added the Cubs. I think the Pirates, as good as they're going to be offensively, I think they're going to come up a little short on the pitching. And I give the edge to both the Cardinals winning the division and the Cubs, finishing in second and getting a wild card and playing the Dodgers in a wild card game.
Mm-hmm. Now you have that. Of course, nobody's really going to dispute with you on the NL East. NL Central, the Cardinals, can they do it again? I believe they can. Adam Wainwright being back for a full season, hopefully no crazy stuff happens there. They have Michael Walker after a great year he had. They have Carlos Martinez with, I guess they're going to be a little more hands-off there, Steve, because he did great for them last year. He's one of the guys that kept them up there all year. 100 wins last year, the only 100-win team in baseball last year. Yeah, and that was just enough to head off the Cubs and the Pirates in what was an incredible season, incredible run towards the end. But then you have the San Francisco Giants in the NL West, which I actually agree with. I don't like the Dodgers as much as a lot of other teams do, a lot of other pundits do, and a lot of other websites do. The Fangraphs projections that I'm looking at here, they have the Dodgers winning 92 games, which is second most in baseball, which is exactly what they did last year. Second most in baseball, their run differential is something that could help that, considering they still have Kershaw, and I don't think Kershaw will struggle as much as he did this year in the early goings as much as he did last year. Now, remember, he had 300 strikeouts last year, an incredible season. In any other year would be Cy Young, but for the historic second half of Jake Arrieta and, of course, Kershaw's teammate stealing some of that spotlight, Zach Greinke, and eventually getting that monster contract. Kershaw's still the highest paid pitcher in baseball. As of this year, I think it's $35 million. He will anchor that staff. He will help them, obviously. He's not going to hurt them. I don't see them as a 92-win team. I like what the Giants have done in adding Johnny Cueto. I like the veteran presence they have there. I like what Brandon Belt is looks like he wants to do this year, which is really break out. He had a solid year last year. You got Joe Panic there. You have Duffy. You have a whole bunch of different characters there that can do a lot of things. Hunter Pence, who's healthy. You have Buster Posey, of course, one of the best in baseball and so many different things that he does. The best catcher, obviously, but also one of the best leaders in baseball. So I agree with you on the Mets. I disagree with you on the Cardinals side. I believe the Cubs are going to end up there. I do believe that the Cardinals are going to be one of the wild card teams. I like the Giants pick there. And I'm going to reserve my second wild card team. I'm throwing it up in the air a little bit here. So I want to think about that just a little bit more. But the AL side, you have Toronto. Of course, some Cleveland love representing the Indians organization, as you do so well. You have them as winning the AL Central, which is a gutsy call. And then you have the Texas Rangers coming out and taking the divisional crown at the AL West. And then you have the wild card as Kansas City Royals, the defending champions, back-to-back World Series appearances. And then you have the Astros coming in as a second wild card team. So let's talk about that and why you went with the Cleveland Indians.
Well, I went with the Cleveland Indians because of what they have in their starting rotation. They have five solid guys in the rotation who essentially could win anywhere from, in my opinion, 10 to 15 games per starter. The defense is there, and I just think that the offense is going to be the integral part that's going to need to step up and score some runs along the way. But you know how I am with pitching and defense. I just think that the Indians' starting rotation is second to none in the American League, and I think right next to what the Mets feature every fifth day, I think the Indians are right there with them, toe for toe. So I think as long as the Indian starting staff stays healthy, I think they're able to ride them to a division crown.
Mm-hmm. So for me, going back to the NL, and my second wildcard team would be the Arizona Diamondbacks. Of course, everybody knows at this point how much I love what they've done this offseason. Tony La Russa, Dave Stewart. I know you love what they've done. That pitching staff, getting Shelby Miller, getting Zach Greinke, and of course all the talent they have on the offensive side, adding Tyler Clippard for the back end. David Hernandez no longer there, so they're putting a lot of faith in Brad Ziegler. And, of course, the aforementioned Tyler Clippard, who they signed recently as well. So that's going to be – those are my picks. The Mets as a division winner, the Chicago Cubs as a division winner in the NL Central. I think they actually crack 100 wins this year with everything they've done, picking up one of the guys that was so great for the Cardinals last year, and John Lackey, and all the other moves they've done. The NL West – being led by the San Francisco Giants, and then the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks winning the two wildcard teams. So there will be two wildcard teams out of the NL West as opposed to two out of I have too many teams going to playoff run there. I have the Giants winning the NL West, and I have the Diamondbacks and the Cardinals as the wildcard teams, the Dodgers missing it. But again, just like you saying before, only by a couple of games or so. In this particular case, I think it's going to be very close. I think it's going to be feast or famine again. I think we're going to see several 90-loss or at least a couple 90-loss teams in the AL in the NL East, and a couple 90-loss teams in NL Central, and at least one 90-loss team in the NL West, and that could be the Rockies again. Could be the Padres, who are just two away from that. So we had in total, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We had six out of 15 90 loss teams, and then you had another one that was 88 loss team that was right on the border, obviously with the which is the Padres. So a lot of feast and famine last year in baseball. To the AL. Toronto Blue Jays, for sure. They mash, they smash, they throw bats, they do everything they need to do. They're a nasty team, even without David Price. You have Marcus Stroman coming back and being healthy this year. It brought J.A. Happ back, which I think is a great move, especially the year he had. The NL Central, I know you like the Indians there. I got to go with the Detroit Tigers a little bit this year with the Kansas City Royals coming in second, although I like the Indians' prospects over the next couple of years. I just the Michael Brantley situation scares me a bit. He is the soul of that offense. I know they have a lot of other weapons there, but unless Carlos Santana goes and becomes that guy that can hit 275, 300 for him and walk 100 plus times like he's been doing, but the average hasn't been quite there, and the power numbers suffer as a result of that as well. If Yan Gomes can come back and be a 15-20 homer catcher, you have a lot here with that pitching staff. But I believe that the Detroit Tigers get the division crown with all the changes they made. I think Verlander will be back and be a factor. Actually, Steve, you just texted me about Brantley coming back in mid-April. He does scare me a little bit still with the injuries. I feel something weird about it. I hope he comes back and he's healthy, but just something just doesn't feel right for me there. But that leads me to that. And it's such a tough division here, too. I know the pitching is going to make the difference. So I don't see the Indians as being a big loser this year, as being, what the Tigers were last year, falling apart and being a 90-loss team or an 87-loss team. But that's my pick there. And the Royals being second place. The NL West, I agree with you with the Texas Rangers. I love the Houston Astros out there as well. I think they'll be a wild card team again. But I think the Texas Rangers will be there and will be able to do what they did last year. And getting Yu Darvish back midseason will be a big boost for them as well. Getting a lot of their players back that they lost last year or didn't have for most of the year last year will be big for them. So those are our picks. Whether you agree with them or not, let us know on Steve Carson on CarsonTheKid.com. Send us leave some comments or send us some emails from there as well. And with that, that kind of wraps up our opening day / opening weekend special. We hope you enjoy the 3 games on Sunday, the 4 on Monday, and obviously the rest of the season will be here to cover everything, soup to nuts. If you want to find out what we were looking at today, we got some of the news from thescore.com, fangraphs.com for the projected run scored per game, wins and stuff like that. So that was from there. And then everything else we just get from, various stuff that we picked up along the way that we read from sportsillustrated.com or Twitter or whatever it might be. So that wraps up this week's show and this week's special. Steve, it's time for our last licks. So I'll yield the floor to you.
All right. Well, I'm just going to stick with baseball as opening day approaches, and I'm going to stick with the Boston Red Sox and having Pablo Sandoval, the Panda, starting on the bench in Boston in favor of Travis Shaw, who has played multiple positions, first base and third base. And, I just got to give kudos to the Boston Red Sox for picking the best player in spring training at each position and putting them out there, even though they paid the Panda 5 years and $95 million. I think they're trying to send him a message. I think they're trying to motivate him a little bit, and starting him on the bench is a way that they're trying to get that done. And for my last lick, I'm just happy to see that when the best players on the field are playing the best, that teams just don't go because of what the contract says. They go with the player that's going to help the team win. And that's what this is all about. It's about, a team and not anybody that's one individual, no matter how big the contract is. So kudos to the Boston Red Sox for starting Travis Shaw at third base when the season starts and giving him the opening day start.
Absolutely. My last lick is going to be a little twofold. So the first one is going to be, Steve, with your first year in the AAA organization for the Columbus Clippers of the Cleveland Indians organization. Wish you much success this year. There's going to be a lot going on for you. So appreciate your commitment to doing the show as always. I know I say that off air a lot too. I say it on air as much as possible, as much as appropriate, obviously. But I know you enjoy doing the show very much. I know you have huge commitments outside of baseball as well. So I love that you're able to do this with me. And we've been doing this over a year strong now. Been able to make a lot of connections and a lot of friendships within the space, and so many great guests that we've had on the show recently with Jerry Krasnick, Tom Verducci, Joe DeSena, the founder of Spartan, Jay Jaffe, of course, one of our favorites, Tom Harding, one of our favorites. Just been a great experience so far. It's going to continue to keep going. I love doing the show and being able to do it with you, which is so cool because, again, we've never really actually met and shook hands, but we're able to do this together, and we're able to do some other projects that we're working on as well. And that's first of my last lick. And now my second last lick. So
let me before you give your last lick, I just want to just tell you how much I appreciate the kind words and, love doing the show. We love talking baseball and, I obviously love coaching and helping young men get to the big leagues and fulfilling their dreams. So I appreciate that, and looking forward to what your last lick is going to be.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. Thank you for the recognition of that, obviously. My last lick is Sunday night, which I've told my wife is a holiday. Of course, it's not, at least not here, nothing that I know of, but it's going to be WrestleMania on Sunday, and those that know me know how much I've gotten into wrestling again over the last couple of years or so, because of storylines, because the way the companies run and how they adapt to change and how they attack social media and how they just do a lot of things the right way. Do I think that they're the best organization in history in terms of being the best with their people? I don't believe that at all. I think you'd be foolish to think that, but It's partially, it's the nature of the business. It's very trusting as well. It's characters. It's a lot of it's made up. It's kayfabe. It's scripted. It's not fake because the injuries are not fake, but it is scripted for sure, obviously. But WrestleMania is the Super Bowl of wrestling. Some people call the Super Bowl the WrestleMania of football, but those are really extreme fans. But it is a global entity, WWE. It's a publicly traded company. What they've been able to do over the last several years with all the criticism that they've had and all the charitable stuff that they've gotten into over the last several years under the governance of Stephanie McMahon and Paul Levesque, a.k.a. Triple H, has been phenomenal. A lot of stuff that they've been working on. Just think about it. They're going to be at AT&T Stadium, Steve, where the Cowboys play. You have screens there that you can see from space. It's going to be incredibly overwhelming. You have 75,000-plus screaming people, millions of people watching at home, TV via their app, mobile, whatever. It's a big event for wrestling fans and just sports. People who like sports in general, SportsCenter is going to be there broadcasting from there. You have Snoop Dogg being inducted in the WWE Hall of Fame. It's a huge weekend. It's not just one night anymore. So WrestleMania, if you are going to watch it, if you are going to just check in to see what's going on, I hope you enjoy it because it is the culmination of a lot of hard work, of storylines being tied in. It is a very special event for sports fans, again, it's, and people who love entertainment and that kind of thing. It's very unique. But, again, if you are going to be watching WrestleMania, I hope that you enjoy it. And again, leave us some notes on carsaythekid.com. We'll be back next week to talk about a whole myriad of different things, including fantasy sports. We'll be recapping the first games, and get you'll get our take on that. And, of course, with Steve and the start of his season, we'll get some stories on what's going on that side, on the minor league side, because you see a lot of stuff there, people hustling, grinding it out, trying to make it, trying to get up there, get to the major leagues, you know, the Holy Grail. And we'll get a lot of those stories as well. So that wraps up this week. Thank you again, Steve. Thank you again for making tonight happen. I know your schedule is so whacked and so crazy, and I know you don't get a lot of sleep these days, but it was great to be able to do the show this week and do an opening day / opening weekend special.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, much appreciated. It's always good. Sometimes the schedule, it really dictates what we can and can't do, but as much as I can get on the show with you, which is pretty much every weekend, or one of the days that we can kind of fit it in, it's special, it's fun, and I love doing it. So, you know, thanks again for joining us. Join us again next week when you know, opening day is fulfilled, and we can talk a little bit about what has transpired in the early going of Major League Baseball. So, thank you for joining us. And look forward to having you again next week.
Absolutely. Thanks all for joining us. Again, stay tuned to carsaythekid.com for more on the show. And we'll catch you next week.
Everybody, good night.